Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Inside College Soccer, brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA. Today, I've got a young man that I'm excited to talk to. He's got an extensive experience in having played college soccer and been around the game for a while. Mason Schuster. How are you, Mason?
I'm doing very well, Don. How are you?
Good. And you're located where for everybody?
Yeah, so I am in Wilmington, North Carolina, right on the coast.
Not bad. Well, not a bad place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. I went to UNCW over here. And then once you're here, it's tough to leave. I can't lie.
Yeah. Nice. Do you guys didn't get hit too bad by those, by the weather coming through there, the hurricane?
No, I mean, there was a good bit of flooding around town, but where my wife and I are, there was nothing too torrential, which was good.
Right on. Did you meet your wife at UNCW?
No, I actually met her maybe 4 or 5 years after I graduated. Yeah, and then we've been married for coming up on a year next month. So,
oh, well, congratulations. First year anniversary. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Right, definitely.
You got that piece of the wedding cake in the freezer and all that stuff.
I'm waiting for it. It's a coconut cream cake. I'm waiting to dig in.
Right on, man. Right on. So you said you played at UNCW, but where'd you come from?
Yeah, so I kind of bounced around a little bit as I was growing up. Was born in Charlotte, was there for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. From there, we moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I was playing in, back then, they were called the Atlanta Silverbacks. I'm not sure what they're called now. It might be NASA Top Hat, I think, is what they transitioned into within their system. And then from there, I moved to Houston, Texas, which is where I spent the majority of my life and playing career. Played for a couple local clubs, but ended up with the Houston Dynamo Academy, which, as you can imagine, was a great experience. Got to do a lot of cool things, play with a lot of good players.
Tell us about that. For people who don't know, explain how the academy system is different than like what we have now with MLS Next and Solars and MLS Next, but they're not an academy. Explain to us how the academy system works with an MLS team.
Sure. So from my experience, I understand that times are different now, but it was the DA, Development Academy. So essentially the best teams in the country, I guess you could say, are playing against each other. Very similar to MLS Next now, I guess not as a grander scale. But yeah, for my experience in the academy, it was there since, I don't even know when, 2011 maybe. But you're playing, I mean, every day, it's like a professional environment.
Same, so you entered the academy at what age?
Entered the academy probably when I was 8 or 9.
I was in, and you were with Atlanta all the way through your career, your youth?
No, I was with Houston all the way through my
Houston.
No worries. Yeah. But for the most part, yeah. So it started out the first couple of years. We didn't have a particular league, I guess you could say. So Houston Dynamo had like 2 days a week that they would have training sessions for the best players in the Houston area. And then they would just play with their local clubs on the weekend and everything like that. But whenever things transitioned into becoming a full club, yeah, I was there since, I think I was at U14 all the way to the U18s.
So by the time you're 15, 16, what's the goal? Are you trying to be a professional?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
so you were convinced at 15, 16, you were going to be a pro, right?
100%. But I mean, as the age-old story goes, if I didn't get injured, it would have happened. But no, I unfortunately went through a couple different injuries that set me back. And yeah, transitioned me into kind of a different goal, which was going to play in college and getting a degree and going that route. So luckily, there was some good help at the Dynamo Academy for that transition. But yeah, professional was definitely always the goal.
Right on. And when did you realize that dream was not going to happen?
Honestly, I had that thought. My It was actually in college. So my freshman year, I ended up spraining my MCL. Last game of the season, I was about to score an amazing upper 90 shot from right inside the box. Then I ended up spraining my MCL, rehabbed all the way through Christmas time, was finally 100% to go, ready to come back to school for the spring season. And then I ended up breaking my fifth metatarsal in my left foot, which required surgery. So I had to get a needle, a nail, whatever it is, in the bone. And that kind of got me thinking, you know, there has to be a lot of other things that you can do besides soccer, with the unfortunate injuries and everything like that. That kind of got my wheels turning as far as looking at different routes. So I'd say probably middle of freshman year, sophomore year is when that realization kicked in, but was always dreaming.
Yeah, no, we worried about our son. I mean, from the time he was 10, he says, I'm going to play professionally in England. That's my goal. And mm-hmm. he chased that goal and made it over to England and played for 2 years, not at a full professional level. Mm-hmm. But my wife and I had a conversation and then had a conversation with him that we were concerned if he didn't reach his goals, that he was going to have a hard time transitioning into, you know, into a life of not soccer, mm-hmm. and that it would destroy him, that it would tear him apart. How was he, because he was investing, you know, he was out of the house at 5 a.m. and then on a run and then juggling and then playing and then mm-hmm. training and then private trainers and studying sports psychology and watching as many games as he could to try to learn the game at the highest level. And I think he had his first 2 or 3 licenses by the time he was 14, 15. He had his mm-hmm. F or his E and his ED. And so he was all invested in soccer. Had it, the game consumed you like that? Or was there always other interests that you had as you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely consumed in that way too. I was, especially in high school and middle school growing up, thank goodness for my parents, you know, driving me to all these practices and everything like that. But training 4 to 5 times a week. Unfortunately, the practice or the facilities were 45 minutes away. So 45 minutes there, 45 minutes back. Yeah, definitely everything was soccer focused. Honestly, I feel like I might have missed out on a couple high school opportunities or whatever it would be to experience that. But no, definitely always focused on the goal of becoming a professional or just furthering my career however far I could.
Were there any older players that you looked up to? Did you get mentored by anybody? Did you connect with any of the older guys? Was there no interaction with the senior team or the reserves or anything like that for the youth?
So towards the later part of my career, in the Dynamo Academy, we were introduced to the first team more, as far as training sessions, playing against them in scrimmages and things like that. But one of the greatest mentors I've had, is a man named James Clarkson. He was the academy director at the Houston Dynamo when I was there. And honestly, I thought him like a second dad. Like, he's a all around just a great man and someone that you look up to. And he really helped formed how I am today, off the field, obviously, but also when I was playing as well. Just kind of the mentality of something he would always say was, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So just kind of that, go get it. Do everything in your power to be successful. So, I definitely say James Clarkson was one of the main people that I looked up to during my soccer career.
Right on. Were there any older players on the senior team that you admired that you were trying to model mm-hmm. yourself after?
Yeah, absolutely. He wasn't there when I was in the later parts of my academy career, but Stuart Holden, he was at the Houston Dynamo for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years maybe. And I just remember in Robertson Stadium, me, my mom, my dad, just screaming, seeing him play was so cool. And we got to transfer over to Bolton in the Premier League. It was so cool watching him and everything I tried to do. Even my hair, I had the spiky hair like he did. I just tried to emulate him as much as I could.
Right on. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that I see missing, except, you know, there's a percentage of guys that are in academies that are kind of climbing the ladder and have gotten close like you have, that also have that. But I think that there's, a mid-level player on the guy's side, and I think it's the majority of the girl's side. Somebody may ream me for that, and I know there are some girls who do, but I think it's the vast majority that don't really have role models like that in the game.
Yeah.
That don't really study those players and say, you know, that style resonates with me, and oh, look how he handled that situation there. Let me try that. Let me see if that works for me. And to have those role models, especially at Holden's level, he played at a very, very high level. And to be able to have those players to emulate and look at, I'm not talking about their personal lifestyle because I don't think players should be emulating that stuff. I'm talking about the playing stuff.
Sure.
It's so important. And I'm not sure, do you see it? Do you see it changing? Do you see players maybe not as interested in it as you and your friends were? Or do you think it's about the same?
Honestly, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I don't think that kids are as interested in maybe the lifestyle of these players, like you're saying. But as far as like playing styles and things like that, my group of friends when I was growing up, we were Fox Soccer Channel is what it was called. All day, every day was on my TV. I was watching it. So were my buddies. We didn't really have texting back then, but we were always calling each other when we saw each other. Like, did you see this? Like, check out this YouTube video, things like that. And like, I can remember growing up before every game, Stuart Holden was someone I looked up to, but another one was Zidane, Zinedine Zidane. And I would always watch his highlight tapes before a game just to kind of get my head in that space of like, okay, that's how I want to play. So yeah, I agree with you in saying, it seems like things are changing a little bit as far as, kids' interest in following players and trying to play in their style, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man. We don't need to get into all the whys of it, but certainly there are more distractions available to kids today than when you grew up, when my son grew up, obviously when I grew up. Yeah, there's more distractions for sure.
Yeah.
It's wild because there's more videos than ever available, and there's more information on players ever than available. It's so easy.
Exactly.
Fox Soccer Channel. We had to search it out and then make sure that our cable provider had Fox. And so when they dropped it, I dropped cable providers when they dropped it, so I can pick up somebody. It was hard to get content. For sure.
No, it was definitely to a level of obsession with Fox Soccer Channel where whatever the team was, I'd be like, oh yeah, I know that player. And nowadays, who knows?
So I want to talk a little bit about your experience from when you realized that college was going to be probably the route for you. Was it, most people would think, oh, it was super easy for him. He was playing for a professional academy. I mean, every coach in the country had to have been willing to listen to him and consider him for their team. And this must have been a really easy recruiting process for you. Was that the case?
No, not at all. Not at all. So, We first started kind of thinking about, you know, the college process and everything like that, probably later into my junior year. So we were scrambling for any type of information, and there really wasn't much of anything out there. And within the academy system, coaches would come out to games. Yeah, definitely. But I don't know, just the position that I was in, we just didn't have any real resource to connect with them or connect with coaches aside from like the database with information where you can send an email. But I mean, obviously, as we know, emails can only go so far. But yeah, it was a really difficult process. It was only until probably October of my senior year when I started talking to schools. And luckily there was someone at the Dynamo Academy who actually played at UNCW, his name was Daniel Roberts, had that connection and was able to get me in contact with the then assistant coach, Zach Haynes, to ultimately come on a visit and help me fall in love with the school. But no, it was a difficult, very stressful process, kind of wondering what to do, how to do it, even with being at a high-level club like we were. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy.
Interesting. I've never had this conversation with anybody in person like this. I've had plenty of Twitter conversations with people, but there is a vocal There are people out there that are very vocal and strong about it, that have a very large audience on Twitter, that say, if you're part of ECNL, you don't need any help from anybody ever.
Yeah.
You're going to be noticed. The coaches are there 2-3, you know, a year, various locations. I've been at every event, ECNL event somewhere in the country, coast to coast. But at any one time, there's 200 to 250 to 300 coaches there, and then a different 300 coaches on the West Coast, and a different 300 coaches somewhere. And so you're going to get in front of 1,000 coaches, and you don't need anybody's help if you're playing at the highest levels. What would you say to that?
I would disagree 100% with that. I mean, for me specifically, whenever we were my junior and senior year, we were always in the top five in the nation in the DA, which at the time was the best league around. And you would think that you would just be getting calls left and right. But yeah, it just wasn't like that. And the whole thing, the big thing for me about the soccer world is it seems massive because the country's massive. There's so many different schools, but it's ultimately a very small world. And if you don't have the personal connections to get in contact with these coaches, then it's so hard to get in contact with these coaches and different schools and get these opportunities, just because they're, you know, sent so many emails a day, to where an email can only go so far, to where it almost just gets lost in the pile, if that makes any sense.
Well, sure it does. Mason, I always look, because I was a college coach, right? And,
yeah.
And I coached at low levels, right? I coached West Coast Division II and then junior college. And we were getting hit with 150, 200 emails a week. Mm-hmm. So if I was out of the office for 3 or 4 days on the road traveling, and I would come back to, you know, a couple hundred emails to go through, there might be some that I skipped or missed or whatever. Oh, I've talked to coaches, Mason, say they'll get 1,000 a week at the highest levels.
Yeah.
And so I always looked at send a player sending an email with the subject line, you know, Houston Dynamo player interested in Wilmington, something that says, oh, they're high level and they want to come here. What's going on? I'll look at their film. Is kind of like playing slot machine.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You're hoping that when they open up their email, that is in their top feed of their what fits their 25 emails or 100 emails per page, that they can see it. And that they see it at that moment, and that they click it at that moment. And if they don't, the advice of most is send another email, hoping it hits the top. Didn't hear back, send another email, hoping it hits the top. And it's like, I would just picture that little old lady sitting there at the slot machine. Here goes my email, send it. Oh, it didn't hit. Here goes my email, send it. Oh, it didn't hit. Here goes my email, send it, and you didn't hit. And while that advice, I know some old lady who hit a big slot machine and never had to work again in a day in her life. But if that's where we're going to live our lives, the odds aren't great. I always look at it as you've got to take control of your life in a different way, right? You can't just leave your life to chance all the time, hoping you get discovered, hoping somebody opens up your email on that day. And I love the story of how you ended up at Wilmington. It was a trusted person who was knowledgeable about soccer, who knew that staff and knew what that staff's needs were, and recognized that you would fit what they wanted. Not to put words in your mouth, but that's the way the majority of players in the country get discovered, is because their buddy that they went to school with calls them and says, I got a kid that you guys would love, and I think he'd love Wilmington. And it's so much easier for a coach when that's the starting point, rather than here's a video of a kid fishing, sending the same email probably to 1,000 schools.
Yep.
And I don't even know that they want to be at Wilmington. In fact, when I call them, they go, oh, UNC, I'm going to UNC, Wilmington. Oh, no, not that UNC. Ah. I wasn't thinking that one. I want the one where Michael Jordan played. That's the one I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the whole aspect of knowing someone who knows someone in the soccer world is huge for us. And I think, like I said before, it's a small world. The soccer world is a small world. So you always know someone who knows someone, essentially. But yeah, the ability to make that personal connection and kind of put your stamp of approval on a player before the coach even sees them. And them having known you and know that you're a credible source makes the world of a difference in making some movement in the recruiting world. So, yeah.
So go to your club coaches. Like, so mm-hmm. Who do you know? What schools do you know? Are any of them, would they be interested in me? Would I be interested in any of them? Right. Mm-hmm. Give me a list to work with, the ones that you can make phone calls to, coach or your trainer or your director of coaching. Right. I mean, a director of coaching at every club in the world should know a college coach, mm-hmm. five, six, very high level. They've been A license courses.
Sure.
You know, that's where I met. That's how my whole coaching career started. Did you know that? I was at a C license course and they asked me to do a goalkeeping session, even though I was, because they didn't have a staff member that could do it. Mm-hmm. And then one of the people in the course said, "Hey, I just got a college job. Will you come be my goalkeeper coach?" And that's how I got started. So you meet people at these courses. And so that's what I tell people and kids. My number one advice is go ask. Mm-hmm. Go ask the people in your community. And maybe you go, you know, maybe it's another club who's got somebody who's higher that your coaching director connect you with their coaching director so they can, they've seen you play. Find people that can assess you, that have seen you play, that know other people that you might be interested in. You're going to slide into that assessment slot for that coach much faster mm-hmm. than not. Now, maybe it's a no. No's are okay. It means you can move on.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a maybe. If it's a maybe, then the next question is, how do I change that to a yes or a no, coach? What do you need from me to change that? And then if it's a yes, then it's a yes. It's great. But I think most families just need answers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree. And it's funny you say that, is kind of reverting back to that saying that I said earlier, where hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. If you're putting in those hours and finding the connections that you need to find to get to where you want to be, that's ultimately what's going to get you where you need to go, and the fastest way to do it. So, yeah, I mean, getting those answers as quickly as you can is what you need to do.
Exactly. So you end up connecting with, what was that, the only school that you were really talking to was Wilmington?
I was talking to Seattle University for a little bit, and then UTRGV, Rio Grande Valley, in Texas for a little bit. But other than that, it was honestly, there weren't too many others out there. And granted, I think that's because the location we were in, unfortunately, at the time in Texas, there was only, I think, one or two D1 schools.
SMU.
Yeah. And then UTRGV was the other one.
That's right. Yeah.
It was a bit of slim pickings for me as far as like geographically, which was somewhat of a hindrance. Granted, we would go play in Colorado and Oklahoma and things like that for games. So there was other schools out there that could come see me play, but I just didn't have the connections to where I could let them know that I was going to be there to watch me play. And at the time I was one of the top producers on the team as far as goals go and assists and minutes played and contributions and things like that. So honestly, I was surprised that it was as difficult as it was, which just goes to show you the connection aspect of it is so important. Even if you're a high level player, if you don't have those connections, it's extremely difficult to get seen and get somewhere.
Right. So you arrive at UNCW, and mm-hmm. was it harder than you expected, or because you had already been in the academy system going 5 days a week, was it like, oh, this just feels like a continuation of club?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a transition, a culture shock, I guess you could say, just for the aspect of being a college student. But as far as training and things like that goes, the level that we were playing at in Wilmington, I say, was a little bit above the level that we were playing at the Dynamo Academy. Technically, as far as physically, it was a completely different game. I was a 155-pound soaking wet kid playing against, you know, 175, 200-pound kids. So that was a bit of a transition, but I'd say overall it was a smoother transition into the college game for sure.
What were the biggest struggles for you? So if you could go back and tell going into freshman year Mason, give him a couple mm-hmm. pieces of his advice, what would you give him to make his life easier?
To be as fit as possible. There was,
I tell people that, and then people go, oh, these Americans, all they care about is running and fitness. It's like, no, no, no. The whole world only cares about running and fitness. The whole world. We run 7 miles a game, people, with no timeouts. I'm sorry. It's a running sport that you have chosen. You must be fit. And it's physical. Go ahead. Get punched and knocked down 15, 20 times while you're playing basketball or whatever. I mean, it's a physical sport. You get smacked. It's like, at the end of the day, it's like you've been in a boxing match if you play a physical game. And that's every level in the world. And people that have never played our game don't quite grasp that. So be fit. What would you, what was the deal with fitness? Did you pass the fitness tests at first when you went in?
So I did not pass the first fitness test. Or we had a couple different fitness tests. We had one crazy one called 120s where you had to run 120 yards in 10 seconds, and then you had 30 seconds to get back to the other side.
That's the first time I read about that was from Anson Dorrance. North Carolina used to run those.
Yeah, it was the worst. But yeah, unfortunately, I failed the first time that we did that one. So I had to come back at 5 in the morning. The sun's barely up, fog still, you know, going over the field. So luckily I passed it that time. But
why do you think you've come on? You didn't magically get fit the next morning. Why do you think you failed the first one?
I don't know. I do not know. It was before. So the transition from academy to college, we had the DA like finals. And then 3 weeks later I was going to school. So my 18-year-old self was like, man, I just had a long season. I deserve a little time off to just sit around and play video games at the time is what I was doing. So I kind of just
be honesty.
I just slacked off for a little bit. I wish I didn't, but I did.
Okay, and so I'm gonna go back and ask that question. How long, when did, okay, the day you failed it, how long till you passed it?
It was maybe 3 days later. We had two or three fitness tests to complete after that one. And then
it's not possible to magically get fit in 3 days. Not possible. So why do you think you failed it the first time?
I don't know.
I'm trying to put you on the spot. I shouldn't say it like that. Look, here's what I've noticed. Fitness tests are 90% mental. If you've run that test before and you know you can pass it, you'll pass it. If you're scared of that test, you're not sure you can pass it. When that pain hits, that really high pain threshold, it's easier just to say, I can't do it. I'll come back in 3 or 4 days. I just can't do it. And while we don't why don't we consciously say that? That's, I think that's what's happening is where our bodies are quitting on us. And I always told our kids when they came up with fitness defamation, practice it. Know you can pass it. Like once a week, you should be doing that test.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that was the thing for me is like, when I first got to school, that was the first time I ever did that test.
Oh, yeah, big mistake. Because you don't know how to pace yourself. I'm going to guess you went out too hard the first 3 or 4. The adrenaline hit, and you didn't pace yourself. It's like, oh, crap, I made it in 16 seconds, not 18, or whatever the number was. Holy crap, I'm going to pass this thing, because the first two, you feel good.
Yeah.
And then once your body's, that lactic acid kicks in, and then once your body's used up all its aerobic capacity, yeah, you're screwed. It's hard.
The surprise comes through about rep 4 or 5, and you're struggling from there. But yeah.
And look, the reason I'm harping on this for kids that are listening to this is because and all the adults out there can say fitness tests are stupid. They do nothing. Let me tell you the reason coaches do fitness tests, people. It's trying to fix the Mason Schusters of the world, the guy that we don't want them taking 3 weeks off or a month off without doing anything. We're trying to scare them a little bit. So that's part of the reason. And most coaches, many won't admit it nowadays, but that's the reason. They're trying to scare players into doing their 10-week fitness packet, right? So that they come in fit, because when we report day one, hello, how are you? We go to a couple meetings. Day two, we go to 3 more meetings. Day four, we go to 2 more meetings. We fill out paperwork. We meet with compliance. We hand out uniforms. And we're starting to practice. We are. By day 8, we probably got our first match. And by day 10, we've definitely got our first match. We might have had a scrimmage and a match. And by day 15, we're playing. We don't have time to get you fit, player. We don't have time to get you fit. If you don't work on fitness, so we put together the best fitness packets we can come up with. Basically, we work with our trainers. We work with other coaches. We work with specialists trying to put together the best fitness packet we can. the players have to do that. It usually runs between 10 and 12 weeks, depending on the problem on the program. And it usually goes from, you know, a little easier to harder. And then most of us will tell the players, here's the two fitness tests that we will be doing. Mm-hmm. This is how they work. This is how they run. This is where you find information on them. And we tell them you should be practicing these once a week. Mason, you're in a little unusual situation in the way you came in that, like you said, just 3 weeks before, you were still playing and you were still going 5 days a week. And that makes it hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are concerned as coaches about overuse injuries. Yeah, so if I was your coach, I would have said, look, you probably won't have to do the fitness packet, but you probably should practice those fitness tests two or three times before you come in. Make sure that you're where you think you are. And I always tell freshmen, if you want to impress a coach, if you want a chance to play in your first inter-squad scrimmage on the first team, or to at least get on the field being top 22,
mm-hmm.
finish top 10 in the fitness test. As a freshman, up 10.
Yeah.
First one up. Everybody will go, oh crap, just beat five seniors. Holy crap, this kid's at least fit. This kid's serious. Let's see if he can play.
Mm-hmm. It's so true, though. It is so true. I'll tell you what, Don, after that horrible first preseason experience with the fitness test, I never ran into that again for the next 4 years or 3 years that I was there. So.
Love it.
Yeah, I definitely learned from my mistakes, but for sure.
So what was the other, is there another thing that you would go back and tell your young Mason self?
I think enjoy it more. I think I was focused a lot on, you know, playing well, and impressing people who had been following me and living up to that expectation, to where I don't think that I enjoyed the process of it, as much as I wish I would have. I had a fantastic freshman class. All seven of us are still, you know, best friends to this day. And I wish in the time I would have kind of sat back and realized the great people that I have around me, as far as teammates, as far as coaches go. Aiden Heaney, was fantastic to me, my time there. But just realize the experience that college soccer is and how unique that it really is. And kind of enjoy it a little bit more, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. And I love that you said that. The things that you were focusing on were externally motivated items, things, because, mm-hmm. you know, wanting to please somebody, kind of not, whether they're happy or not with your performance is not in your control,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. wanting to win things. It's like, I always said that winning is a byproduct of doing everything else right.
Mm-hmm.
Winning happens more often than not when you do all the other things right. And I think love of the game, just enjoying the moment and your friends, and find people you'd run through brick walls for, man. Mm-hmm. I'd catch a bullet for you, brother. I would do anything for you. And when you can get a group of guys just focusing on that camaraderie, and appreciating each moment as it comes, leads to winning mm-hmm. more often than not. The teams that don't tend to win are the disjointed ones. There's this clique of three kids and that mm-hmm. clique of four guys, and that group over there doesn't like that group, and that guy's dating that guy's ex-girlfriend, and so he doesn't like him, and then mm-hmm. he's got his buddy, and they come to practice every day and they do their thing, but they're not enjoying their time together at all. They don't really like each other.
Yeah.
And how do you think that would have changed your experience?
I mean, the good thing was while we were there, through my 4 years, we were all, you know, very happy with each other, very, you know, very team oriented. We were all focused on one goal. So the winning aspect was something that we ran into a lot. I think through the 4 years that we were there, we were in the top 25 for all 4 years of it.
Wow.
It was incredible. I think we got up to, it's like 13, I think was the highest that we got.
Very hard to do.
Absolutely. Won a conference championship. So I have a nice ring I like to show my wife every now and again to remind her that I used to be a really good athlete. but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was just such a cool experience. And I recognized how lucky I was to be playing college soccer, and kind of just take a step back and realize, how cool it is. I don't know. It's tough to say. It's tough
you
to
were
say.
In the top 1% of all the kids playing in the United States. It's really hard to play at that level. And then to see it at a top 25 level, people don't understand. It's it's good. It's quick. It is, and it's good soccer. I mean, you know, people look at the bad soccer games that are out there, and there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. And they look at that and they go, college soccer is horrible, with this sweeping generalization. But the level you saw it at and played at is very good. I mean, the teams in the NCAA in the top 25 are traveling over to England, and they're beating they're beating first division teams pre-seed. They're beating them, and they're beating reserve teams in the higher leagues. And it is, I think our soccer's gotten a lot better in the U.S. since I grew up, for sure, in the 80s. I'm going to tell you, it's a lot better, and the training is better. It's just not enough of it. You know, we get impatient. You know, it's 25 to 50 teams, and we look at 300 teams, and we go, yeah, but the other 250 aren't very good. These guys over here are good at the level you played at. Who's the best player you ever played against?
You might laugh when I say this, but Lionel Messi was the best player I've ever played against. We were, when I was at Houston, we got to train with the Argentinian national team for probably like 5 or 6 days. So we got to scrimmage them a couple times, and it was ridiculous to see a player up close like that. But as far as players I've played against.
Well, that's a good one. Hey, look, that counts. That's legit.
I'll take it.
I'm just like, Chandra, I went to see Messi play one time in San Jose, and he didn't play. I got to watch him warm up. That's the closest I ever got to Messi in person.
Yeah.
Like, I got to watch him warm up, but you got to play against him. Not just him. That would have been Suarez and, would have been that whole group.
It was Aguero was there. Otamendi was there. Javier Mascherano
was who had to defend you?
I was playing the 10, so Mascherano was on me, and it was an interesting time, to say the least. It was an interesting
What'd you learn?
Don't try and dribble past him, because he will take you out. I think I tried in that game maybe 5-10 times. I only got past once, which led to our only attack of the game. I think we lost like 26-0, something like that. But it was such a cool experience.
That's wild. That's absolutely wild. What about in college? Did you guys have a rivalry? Was there a game that you guys always look forward to, that it was a war? They'd beat you sometimes, you'd beat them sometimes, and kind of didn't like each other, but those kind of fun rivalries?
Oh, yeah. James Madison University. That was we were always fighting for the top spot in the CAA at the time. And those were always such fun games to play in. Either we were going up to there or up to Virginia to play them, or they were coming down here to play us. It was always so fun. Specific players on those teams I can think of. His last name is Ferriola. I don't know his first name, but he was this center mid that they had. He's so good. I think he ended up getting drafted 2021 or 2020. But he was a great player. As far as in-state rivalries go, whenever we played UNC, those are always fun games. It seemed every season we would play them either there or at our house. Crowds were ridiculous when Chapel Hill came to Wilmington to play. So those are always such fun games to be in.
Those are the memories. Is there one game in your college career you wish you could have had back?
Ooh, that's a good question. My I think it was sophomore year. We played, or maybe it was my junior year. We played Furman in the second round of the NCAAs. And it was really cold that day, which, coming from Houston, the cold is like my worst enemy. So I wish it was a little bit warmer, but we ended up going down to PKs and ended up losing in PKs, unfortunately. But, you know, there was just times in the game I wish I could have affected things differently. But, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day. But I wish we could go back to that game and just replay it. Or my last game of my senior year, we played JMU in the conference finals. And we lost to a free kick by the player I was talking about before, Ferriola, in like the 80th minute or something like that. And it was a peach of a free kick. I wish we could go back and replay that game.
Your senior year, last game, the most hated team.
Storybook.
And you lose it. And that's the way you walk off the field, knowing you'll never play again.
Yeah.
Wow, man, the emotions of that one. I can feel that one. No, I've been there as a coach. I've been there as a, we've all been on both sides of it if you've been around long enough as a coach and as a player. And no better feeling than winning one in the last minute. And no worse feeling than losing one, especially in your situation. Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. So, that's how you end it. That's it. So then what happens after that? Did you try to play anymore?
No, I didn't actually. It was kind of a decision that I made probably halfway through my senior year, where I had broken my foot a couple times, had three surgeries on my foot throughout my college career. And it was kind of getting to that point where it was difficult. It was painful to walk around sometimes, and I just didn't want to, I didn't think I wanted to do it to my body anymore. So, yeah, decided to hang up the boots after that and played some Sunday league games, which was fun. Playing a men's league, as everyone does, but other than that.
Yeah, I did tell about 38 and then did an injury, same thing. It's like, oh, this is it. This is stupid. I'm not gonna be able to walk. so it takes us, boy, now you're with, we haven't even mentioned yet. So, by the way, everybody, Mason works with us at SRUSA. How'd this decision to join SRUSA, helping kids try to find their right fit, how'd that come about?
Yeah. I mean, I graduated in 2020, so 4 years ago now. And, you know, the first year or so after school, I was like, yeah, this is nice not having, kind of taking a step away from soccer, but the itch always comes back. And I needed to figure out how I could, scratch that itch, I guess you could say. And the opportunity came about to, join SRUSA, and help young men get to the next level. Ultimately
find
women find the right fit in the school. And it was something I had to jump all on. It's so, what's the word? Gratifying helping these players get to the next level and seeing dreams be realized. It reminds me of, as I was going through this recruitment process, and granted mine was a short experience because it was kind of pushed to the back end of my senior year. Just the feelings of, oh, this coach is interested. Perfect. Let's get in conversations. Let's get them connected. They want us to come on a visit. Awesome. When they get offers, it's like, I got an offer. It's like, it's amazing. I'm so grateful that I'm able to help these players, and kind of guide them through the steps, that I went through. And ultimately as they get to school, I'm excited to be there for them as somewhat of a mentor, for the college experience, whether that's on the field or, you know, off the field, because there's so many different things that's going on. I feel like with my experience being, you know, 4 years prior, I know pretty much exactly what they're going through and how to kind of walk them through and, help them figure out how to navigate the next stage of their life. So.
Yeah. And we're thrilled to have you. And you didn't quite make, I made it 6 years out of the game before it drew me back in. You made it four. It's hard to walk away. as you said,
it's
really
hard. So
in your blood. It's in your blood. And we love to have you, that you're with us, man, because I love the youth and the enthusiasm and the fact that your experience coming out of college is recent provides a lot of value to our clients that you're talking to and that you're sharing with. And like you said, advising and mentoring. And it's always, you know, the end of the season will be here in a few weeks, believe it or not. And we'll be getting phone calls from our clients like, so what do I tell the coach at the end of the year meeting? He said he wants to talk to me. What's he going to say? How is this going to go? You know, what do I ask? And being able to have that conversation with our kids and prepare them going into a meeting, something that a parent, I don't think, would ever really know how it goes, right? And that most many club coaches don't really know how it goes if they haven't experienced it. And you just coming out of it, talking about the fitness and talking about, you know, how players should approach their experience going into college, all of that provides a big value, Mason. And we're really glad that you're on board with us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so thankful to be here. It's a great community to be a part of. So yeah, I'm very grateful.
How do people get a hold of you? I know that some of our staff is at capacity, aren't taking on any clients, but mm-hmm. you're just joining us in a few months now, right? Mm-hmm. You've been with us for three, four months, and mm-hmm. You've got some clients that you're managing. You're getting, mm-hmm. you've got some offers for some of our clients already. I know you've got a young man that plays for the full men's team, Puerto Rican national team that you just signed, mm-hmm. but you've got some capacity on your roster to manage more. So how do people get a hold of you? How do coaches get a hold of you if they're wanting mm-hmm. to know about your Puerto Rican national team player, for example, or how do players and families get a hold of you, Mason, if they're interested in talking to you more about how you might be able to help them?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say the best way to get in contact with me is through my email. It's Mason, M-A-S-O-N, at srusasoccer.com. It goes straight to my cell phone. I check it 5, 6, 7 times a day. But yeah, I think that's the best way to get in contact with me.
Well, thanks, Mason, for coming on board.
It sounds good. Thank you so much, Don. I appreciate it.
All right, Mason. Talk to you soon, buddy.